Welcome to the new season of Cybersecurity Awareness Month podcast series, an integral part of India Insights podcast suite. I'm your host, Pallavi, and today we're diving into a critical topic of cyber resiliency. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest for today, Pradeep Eladath, partner in cybersecurity consulting at EY India. Pradeep is a seasoned expert with profound understanding of cybersecurity landscape. His expertise is instrumental in helping organizations navigate through the complexities of cyber threats and bolster their defenses to withstand and recover from cyber incidents. In this episode, we'll explore the strategies and practices that underpin cyber resiliency, an increasingly important aspect of cybersecurity in our interconnected world. Pradeep, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Pallavi. It's great to be here and look forward to speaking with you and the audience.
Thank you, Pradeep. Pradeep, for our listeners who may be very new to the concept, could you define what cyber resiliency means in today's digital environment?
Yeah, sure. So broadly, if you define cyber resilience, it's the capability to deliver an intended outcome. So you could either be in the business of delivering products to your customers or services. So the whole concept of cyber resilience is the ability to continue delivering these outcomes, that is these products and services, despite having any adverse cyber attacks or going through a large-scale cyber incident. So holistically, if you look at it, cyber resilience is a combination of cybersecurity, business continuity, and largely operational resilience. That's one point to the whole story. The other part is there tends to be a confusion between cyber security and cyber resilience per se. So broadly, if you define cyber security, cyber resilience actually encompasses cyber security within it. But when you look at cyber security in a very narrow sense, you can say that it is identifying the gaps in your infrastructure and your application layer, putting protection mechanisms in place, having a detection mechanism to detect any intrusions or anything which is not regular to your business. That could be placed as cybersecurity. Taking the story a little forward, cyber resilience would involve anticipating, looking at the whole story from the point of view of an attacker rather than a defender. So what would an attacker do? He would first look at your attack surface. He sees you from the internet. So how does his attack surface look? And using that viewpoint, how do you anticipate an attack? And the ability to withstand an attack. So anticipating could mean looking at your attack surface, what are your open vulnerabilities, and putting strategies in place to protect your attack surface as well as restore data. Also, you should have the ability to withstand an attack. That's the second principle of cyber resilience. So cybersecurity might put controls in place. It is not about what controls you put in place, but how strong your controls are to withstand an attack. That's the second principle. The third one could be, how are you responding to the attack? So while the attack is going on, how do you respond to it? And do you have incident management plans? Are your teams ready? Is there a communication plan? And is there a proper mitigation strategy in place? And the fourth principle would be to recover from this attack, which means going back to the previous principle of continuously delivering intended outcome. So as part of that, when you recover from this attack, you should be able to continue delivering the services that you were doing before the attack. And the last one is obviously learning from all of this, because if you don't learn from it, you're not going to be able to mitigate any future attacks. So basically, you should have the agility and the strength to withstand an attack and quickly bounce back to normal operations. If possible, continue normal operations during an attack. That's cyber resilience.
Thank you, Pradeep, for giving us the context of cyber resiliency and also sharing the core principles. Now, could you tell us how has the shift to remote work and increased digitalization affected the companies' approach their cyber resiliency strategies?
Remote work post-COVID, you can say it is a challenge. You can say it is an easy way of working. It's a way of productivity. It's brought in a lot of digital layer within organizations. But at the same time, when we look at cyber resilience, our whole viewpoint, the eyes are from the view of the attacker. So if you look at that, what he sees is again your attack surface. So let's say there's a company of 1 lakh people, and out of them 50% are working remote, and that remote could be from their houses in the same city, could be from different cities in the same country, could be from different countries across the globe, and could be at various levels of local access, whether it is from a broadband or from a mobile connection, different kind of attack, different kind of surfaces from which an employee is trying to reach the enterprise resources. So with so much of an attack surface, there is a need for enterprises to look at how do you protect so many attack surfaces, while initially there was only one. Everybody was pre-COVID always within the office, secure premises of the office. So you need to bring in things like multi-factor authentication. VPNs were always in use, but for a very small group. And endpoint detection response becomes very important. Protecting your data, which is now either being accessed from, say, 50,000 different locations or stored at multiple locations, could be multiple data centers, could be multiple clouds spread across the world, could be within SaaS applications sitting in multiple places. Protecting these data, which multiple people are accessing from different points, each kind of access brings in a different threat. So protecting that data is very important. And that takes us back to the point of cloud. A lot of enterprises are moving to the cloud. Many are coming back from cloud to on-prem because of costs, but the flexibility the cloud offers, a lot of people want to go back to the cloud. And these remote workforces find it easy to operate from the cloud, either their own resources or company resources provided from the cloud. Again, you need a very strong identity and access management, and cloud access security brokers were bringing in a range of data protection and visibility into especially multi-cloud environments. With so many people sitting at multiple places, the single biggest way a ransomware is entering a system, which is one of the major cyber threats we are facing, is spear phishing. Very targeted phishing mail to an individual whom he trusts, he or she trusts, with context of what that individual is working right then, based on various social engineering studies that the hacker has done. So he's sending it to targeted 10, 15 people based on some 2-3 people he trusts, he or she trusts. So that phishing attacks is causing a lot of, and with these people sitting at various places, it's very difficult for somebody to even pick up the phone and call. So while they're on a call, they receive a mail, they click a link, and the damage is done. That's another kind of threat which is coming in. And obviously the compliance regulation, whether it is GDPR or Indian DPDP Act, the Data Protection Act, which is coming in, that's causing a nightmare to everybody across the country as well as across the globe. And the penalties are huge. Some of the penalties that we hear in GDPR are ranging into multiple millions of dollars. Supply chain risks from a technology viewpoint, that is the vendors who are accessing our system remotely, they are also remote workforces. So while we are focused only on our employees, our remote workforce, these remote employees are going to cause a pile of issues that we are facing, which needs to be looked into. And I would also want to talk one last point about the business's whole angle when we are talking of remote workforce. So there is, when we are going through a large scale ransomware attack and the people are working remote, there is a huge reliance on technology. What if there is a ransomware attack and the total recovery time is ranging from between 15 days to 6 months? How are they going to work manually sitting remote? These are some of the questions which need to be answered as part of a remote workforce enablement. Thanks.
Thank you, Pradeep. Speaking of technologies, what role do you think the emerging technologies play in enhancing an organization's cyber resiliency?
So let me touch upon 3-4 quick points on emerging technologies. Obviously, the darling of the day is artificial intelligence, and strongly supported by its close associate, which is machine learning. Would you know that a driverless car, obviously in India, I don't think we are probably years away from driverless cars, because even drivers are finding it difficult to drive. Driverless car can generate about 4 terabytes of data in 1 hour. That's the amount of data it generates. So if that is the data we generate, that is the kind of traffic that is coming at us, then we need something like AI or ML to analyze this vast amount of data and to, within that data, identify patterns and anomalies to identify that within this, say, 4 terabytes of data, is there a thread, a single thread of, say, 10 KB, which could be a hacker trying to enter the system and he could not, trying to enter the system and he has, trying to find out all of that. So basically proactive threat hunting and having automated responses and having good mechanisms for detection and response using AI and ML, that's one point I see. The other point we mentioned earlier about zero trust architecture. So basically zero trust means we don't automatically trust anybody inside or outside the perimeter. Despite a single authentication, every level they come within the enterprise where the crown jewel data is kept, the intention is to validate the person at every step so that at some point the hacker will be caught and he will be stopped at the right point before he can laterally spread. This also, what it does is it reduces the attack surface for the attacker, and he has to study more, work harder, and reduces our chances of the hacker A, entering the network, or once he enters, to be able to contain him to certain areas. The other thing we are seeing is proliferation of IoT devices. I'm sure all of us are wearing smart watches. There are smart specs these days and multiple such devices. And these are also proliferating into our houses. In manufacturing, it is all across the enterprise, whether it is attaching along with SCADA devices or multiple such devices. Securing these devices has become a nightmare because, like we said earlier, it is music to the ear of the attacker that instead of 1 point pre-COVID where he could enter the enterprise, now he has, say, 10 lakh points from where he can enter the enterprise, and that is causing to be a challenge. So we need enhanced encryption, we need to be able to do patching at regular intervals, and we need to be able to monitor such stuff. The endpoint has become a key, you mean your laptop and desktop has become a key issue in today's time. So if you look at it, the XDRs which have come in, they use a lot of AI and behavioral analysis to detect malware. So eventually, the ransomware, like we said earlier, has to come in through a phishing mail, a spear phishing mail. Somebody has to click it. It has to download on the laptop. The ability to quickly detect it at that edge level rather than at a central level is important. That's why technologies like XDR are really working. Lastly, I would like to speak. We spoke about GDPR. We spoke about Indian DPDP Act. So there are privacy-enhancing technologies which have come in today's date, which, let's say, the marketing team wants to work on personal data. But if you send personal data to somebody who's not authorized to use that data, you're violating the law. And you could be sending out crores in penalty. So what do you do? There are technologies like homomorphic encryption, which allows the data to be encrypted, yet allows you to determine patterns from the data. So those, I would think these few technologies are the new areas that are coming in on which we need to work on, especially in the area of cyber resilience.
Thank you, Pradeep. Could you also share some insights on importance of employee training and awareness in building a cyber resilient culture within the organization?
Well, I would see, first of all, we spoke about ransomware being a key threat within the whole cyber world. While other threats do remain, but ransomware is really bringing in the dollars to the hacker. Nation states are using ransomware to collect intelligence as to what another nation or another enterprise is going to do next. People are stealing corporate research data. There is medical data, pharma data, there is health data. All of this is available for stealing. So if you look at from a point of view of an employee who is become the last chain in this whole story, and if that chain is weak, that is what the hacker is looking for, because the enterprise perimeters are strengthened. Enterprise is aware that people are spread out and each of them can be a point of failure. So training is an important consideration. Now the question comes, what kind of training do we provide? Do we need to provide a training overload? At what levels do we provide this training? These are all key considerations. For example, it is important that when an employee enters an organization, there should be a right context set about the importance of data. And within data, various categories of data. For example, a data like PII and SPI data is a completely different story over a regular data which does not have personal information. Because on one, you are subject to a regulation, and in the other, you may not be subject to a regulation at all, like a DPDP Act or a GDPR. So in the ones which are not, you still cannot send that data or play around with the data. But if you send out this one, not only termination, but there could be penalties, prison, imprisonment, and multiple other things could realize. So it is important to tell the employee what they can do, what they can't do, the right use of resources of these technologies that you're using, and the hardware like the laptops and all that are given to you, and also the importance of data. The other point, which is very critical from a training viewpoint, is we are talking of general employees first. The point which is critical is from a training viewpoint is that what is my responsibility as an employee in the company? How do I contribute? A, I can inform when I see something going wrong around me. B, I cannot be a party to something that is happening despite it happening in my team. Or C, I happen to be aware of something which could damage the reputation of the company or data getting leaked out. I should immediately report it to the right resources. So the right training at the right level, so we need to segment it into all staff, middle management, senior management, board. Every level, there needs to be a different level of training provided. For example, why would you be interested in the board? The board should have cyber security and cyber resilience as an agenda in every board meeting, because what you cannot protect, you cannot provide as a service to others. So they need to be doing that. Once they do that, the leadership is able to prioritize cyber security and cyber resilience and allocate the right resources at the right time to the right resources at the right time to the people who are responsible for cyber resilience within the organization.
Thank you, Pradeep. Pivoting towards the future, looking ahead, what trends and challenges do you foresee in the realm of cyber resiliency, and how should the organizations prepare for such a change?
So, like we discussed earlier on the emerging technology side, the sophistication of cyber attacks today has increased. The cyber criminals are sophisticated. Nation states with unlimited funding are jumping into the fray for multiple reasons, whether it is financial or strategic. And they are leveraging AI and machine learning to conduct these attacks. But organizations will need to adopt. They cannot say that because the ferocity of the cyber attacks are increasing and they are using AI and ML, I'm still not going to use it. You're going to be left behind. You need equally advanced defensive technologies and strategies to counter these cyber attacks. Ransomware we spoke about earlier. I like to keep talking about ransomware because that's the most credible threat. They are after your data. They know that without your data, you are nothing. And without the data, you can't provide anything to the customer. And with such regulations coming in, if you lose the data, you're going to shut shop in a few days. So they are also growing in sophistication. They're targeting not just encrypting your data and leaving it there, they're threatening to release sensitive data in public. I mean, that can go really messy with something like a GDPR or a DPDP with multiple penalties, could again result in a shutting of shop. We spoke about supply chain vulnerabilities. That's another trend which is really coming in. We heard about the solar wind attack, which was a software supply chain attack involving their Orion platform. Basically, Orion platform was their network infrastructure monitoring and management platform, where there was a nation state adversary apparently who exploited these vulnerabilities, and it allowed that threat actor to install malware on SolarWinds customer network. Now there are multiple thousands of customers which are impacted, but the Orion itself had about 33,000 odd customers, 50% of whom were supposedly impacted. So there needs to be a very thorough assessment of vendors and understanding of supply chain risks as to who is connecting to your network. What is the vulnerability at their end? It's not enough for just me to be secure as an enterprise, but anyone who's connecting to me must maintain equal or higher level of security. We spoke about remote work. That's another challenge which you're facing. There is, we need to have secure connectivity, zero trust models, and any unauthorized software update should be curtailed. Many organizations are not stopping installation of software. People are downloading AI softwares and trying to make presentations and stuff like that. But these shadow softwares bring with them multiple vulnerabilities. We need to be able to detect, curtail, and get them removed from them. Many of these issues are eventually going to result in regulatory compliance. And the penalties are so heavy that in one or two incidents, we could literally shut shop in medium to small organizations. So it is very important that we know what our risks are, protect our data, and avoid any penalties, and especially maintain customer trust. Well, once lost, it's going to take years to come by. The other area we spoke about earlier is about IoT, OT security and IoT devices. And many of these IT, IoT and OT devices are getting integrated, and that's causing a security nightmare across. So while we are building security operation centers to monitor the IT network, there's a need also to build similar platforms to monitor the OT networks. And maybe a combination of these, that's going to be a nightmare with the amount of data these devices are going to throw. A very random threat which I could other think of is quantum computing threat. Now, in the current method of encryption, the quantum computing, as and when it comes to a particular level, it could render the current encryption methods obsolete. So this threat is a little far away. Even encryption mechanisms like AES 128 are currently vulnerable to a quantum attack, but not being broken. AES 256, however, is a further way away, but it is still knocking at our door. So I suggest organizations should keep a watch for trends and developments in this area to see what are the quantum safe encryption algorithms that are going to come. What does it take to migrate from the current setup to that setup? Are they working on any proprietary encryptions? That's going to be a nightmare. So all of these issues need to be kept in mind. And The other point I can think of is in the field of cyber resilience is there's a huge skill gap. The whole understanding of cybersecurity and cyber resilience, while the wave is growing and the mode and the mechanisms of attacks are also changing, the skills are not developing at that speed. The speed at which attackers are going, probably enterprises are trying to catch up, but the skill is left far behind. So that is one area I think we should really work upon. And lastly, I would like to touch on the darling of the moment, that is deepfakes. Deepfakes is basically a combo of deep learning and fakes. Combination is deepfakes. So you would have seen deepfakes of multiple American leaders and Russian leaders and Ukrainian leaders. These are all deepfakes which have no fact of reality about them, but they are spreading disinformation, especially during campaigns or some could be during a very critical merger and acquisition, and they could cause immense reputational, financial damage, could lead to legal implications before being found out that it's a fake. So organization needs to find way to detect and respond to these new kind of threats. So I would summarize to say, look at your training, where all you need to train your people because skills are scarce. Have a very proactive stance. Go ahead and do more, because more in cybersecurity is not enough. So keep doing more. You know you're going to be attacked, so keep your incident response updated and have a focus around resilience. Think resilience rather than recovery. Recovery is something which goes down and can be brought up. Resilience is something which you can keep running despite an attack. So think resilience. And lastly, keep yourself, your teams, your policies, your frameworks updated so that it can percolate down to the on-ground implementation, and which really means that you are abreast of what is happening around the world, especially from an attacker's viewpoint.
Pradeep, your expertise has been invaluable in shedding light on the importance of cyber resiliency. Your guidance is sure to help our listeners to fortify their defenses against the ever-evolving cyber threat landscape. Once again, thank you for joining us and sharing your invaluable insights.
Thanks, Pallavi. It's been a pleasure to join you and offer my perspective. So cyber resilience is a critical aspect of cybersecurity, and I'm glad we could discuss it in detail today. Look forward to the next podcast and speaking to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you to all our listeners for joining us in such insightful conversation on cyber resiliency. We hope you've gained a deeper understanding on how to protect and strengthen your organization against cyber threats. Be sure to stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to explore the most pressing cybersecurity topics. Until then, stay proactive, stay informed, and most importantly, stay resilient.